Michael by name, but then looked at his face, his eyes, and the way he was furrowed and concerned, nodding along with whatever the person on the other end of his call was saying, lips tight and grim. She waited interminable seconds, threw her hands up just to get a reaction from Carmichael. Carmichael saw her gesticulation and made eye contact with her, but he didn't speak to her, and his eyes didn't apologize. The anger went out of Carolyn like a strong wind suddenly dying. Shit. This was bad. The two of them stared at each other. Carmichael blinked. Yes, he said, whoever he was speaking with. I'll tell her. Then he disconnected.
What is it?
Carolyn's voice tightened.
What happened?
Pete, the old man that owns the safe house.
Right, I know who he is.
He set off a duress code with Honeycutt's people, and now he's not answering up. Silence for a moment. Carolyn opted not to say anything. I think his house might have been hit, Carmichael said.
Hit?
By the coax.
Shit.
If they have Pete. Carolyn spun to the map and finished the acrid thought.
Then they might know what we're doing.
Chapter 26. Ringing ears, aching sinuses, the smell of smoke, the hazy, clouded image of the atrium. Walter only knew that he needed to be moving forward. Dimly, he was aware of people shouting. Ahead of him and Getty, Clay and Monty sprinted for the breach door. The door itself, mangled and chewed, was still bouncing off its hinges, smoke trailing from the jagged edges where the breaching charge had ripped it from the door frame. Kaz, Gibbs, and Harris were already slipping through the doorway. Gunfire chattered. Screams. More gunfire. Walter looked down in time to keep him from stumbling over the body of a dead guard. For a brief moment, as Walter stared at the man's eyes, he thought he was still alive. But no, there was a hole just below his right eye, and the man's brains were on the floor. Walter stepped over the man and picked up the pace. He glanced behind him and saw Getty right there, eyes forward, focused on the doorway. Focus on the task at hand. Walter hit the door and slipped in, clearing it quickly and moving to the left to get out of the door frame. His caution was unnecessary. The new breeds had taken the office area. There were two dead bodies and two live. Both were in Fed uniform. Harris and Gibbs each had one of the live soldiers and kicked their legs out from under them, sending them to their knees and then pinning them up against the wall. Don't you fucking move! Clay and Monty appeared from inside the furthest office to the left. Offices are clear, Clay announced. A few paces back from the two captured soldiers, Kaz straightened up and took a quick look around the room. Walter followed his gaze and they seemed to both fixate on the door at once. There were offices in this section, but their doors were wooden. This one was a complete seal, and it was metal. That's gotta be it, Walter said, stalking quickly towards it. Can you breach it? Kaz followed. His shrouded head pivoted up and down, checking the door out. Yeah, probably, but I'd rather these two mokes open it for me. Walter nodded. They didn't want to breach the safe room door unless absolutely necessary. They didn't know how well protected the money was inside that room, and an explosive charge could end up shredding it, or at the very least, scattering it across the room and making it harder to gather up. Walter stepped to the two soldiers on the ground. He patted Harris on the shoulder. Harris, prep a breach on that door just in case. Harris nodded and slipped away. The soldier he'd been guarding dared to look back. Walter slammed his face back into the wall. Don't you fucking look at me! He took a moment to look at both of their collars. The man that he had against the wall had a single bar on his collar. The other soldier had two. You, Walter said, looking at the man with two bars, while he placed the muzzle of his rifle to the back of his own prisoner's head. Captain, you're going to open that safe room or I'm going to kill the lieutenant. The captain smartly stayed staring at the wall, but Walter saw the way his face scrunched up, not in physical agony, but in mental. It's just money, Captain, Walter said. It's not worth anybody's life. Which was a lie. It was worth Walter's. The lieutenant in Walter's hands remained silent. He didn't want to die. His captain didn't want to be responsible for him dying. Okay, the captain said. All right, I'll open the door. Walter looked at Gibbs and nodded to him. Let him up. Gibbs pulled the captain to his feet and growled, his battle shroud nearly touching the captain's ear as he hauled the man to the door. You do anything but key the correct code for that door and things are going to end very badly for you and the lieutenant. You understand that?
Yes.
You had your chance to be a hero when we came in the room, Gibbs continued as he parked the captain roughly in front of the door. And you didn't. Don't start now. The captain nodded shakily and stared at the keypad. He started blinking rapidly. Walter looked at him and felt a note of misgivings creep up from his gut. You do know the code, right? The captain kept staring at the keypad.
Right, he mumbled.
Then open the fucking door, Walter yelled. We don't have all day, motherfucker. All right, the captain yelped, suddenly angry. All right, okay.
He reached forward with a sudden decision and tapped a rapid 5-digit code. The way he did it made Walter's heart skip a beat, and he thought in that bare second that maybe the captain was trying to pull one over on them, enter some sort of lockdown sequence that would seal them out of the safe room. But then the keypad simply turned green and the safe room door opened. Kaz pointed to the captain and the lieutenant.
Gibbs and Clay, gag these fuckers and tie them up and let's get the fuck out of here.
Walter tossed a glance to Getty, who had already slung his rifle and doffed a pack from his back. He stepped to the door, ripping open the zippered enclosure of the pack. Walter followed him into the safe room. It was a square room with metal walls. It had a metal table. On that metal table was a large black box. Protruding from the side of the black box was a control module. This was not a part of what Hughes had briefed him on. Hughes had stated that the money would be out in the open. Walter didn't see a damn dollar bill. Just the table and the machine that sat upon it. Getty slapped his open pack down on the table and looked at the black box. He spread his hands.
What the fuck is this?
Walter slipped his own pack off his shoulders.
I'm guessing money is inside. It better be inside.
When he had the pack off his shoulders, he keyed his comms.
Rabbit to Briar Patch. I'm looking at a big black box. The fuck is it?
Getty looked at Walter, waiting for a response over the comms. There was a long pause, then Carolyn's voice.
Hey,
she said, and he knew from the tone of her voice that something was wrong.
Listen to me. We might have an issue. There's a possibility that they know where you are right now. You need to get out.
Walter and Getty stared at each other. Walter's head buzzed drunkenly. He blinked, shot his eyes to the big black box on the table.
No, he said over the comms. Absolutely not. We're here. We are right fucking here.
You need to get out right now,
she insisted. Walter's eyes were fixated.
I'm looking at a big black box with a module on the side, he said, speaking slowly and obstinately. If time is short, then you better put our man on the line and explain to me what the hell we're looking at.
There was silence on the comms, but Walter could imagine that Carolyn was probably cursing up a storm right now. His obstinacy had always had a unique ability to infuriate her. He didn't want to piss her off right now, but that was just how this one was going to go. In the back of his mind, he thought, what the hell happened? What went wrong? How'd they find out? Who talked? Kaz appeared in the doorway. He ripped off the battle shroud and stared at Walter hard.
What the fuck are you doing, Walt?
Walter jabbed a hand at the box on the table.
I'm getting the fucking money. That's what we fucking came here for, and that's what I'm gonna do. 30 seconds isn't gonna make the difference.
30 seconds can make all the fucking difference, Kaz shot back. When command tells you to abort, you fucking abort.
Walter shook his head.
This ain't about what the military does, Kaz. It's about what I'm doing. It's about what we need.
We need, Kaz said, or you need.
Walter didn't answer. Hughes's voice came over the comms.
They must have beefed up security, he said by way of an opening statement. It's likely just a glorified cash box, probably operated by a code. Do you have anyone that might have the code?
Walter still stared at Kaz.
Get the captain, he said.
Kaz only wasted another half second, but must have decided that an argument would take longer than simply complying. He spun around and disappeared for all of 5 seconds before reappearing with the captain, who had been bound but not yet gagged. Walter looked at the captain and pointed to the box.
The code. Now. No fucking around.
Hughes on the comms.
Rabbit, did you copy my last? Is there someone there with a code?
Working on it,
Walter snapped back.
Stand by.
The captain took a few heavy breaths.
5941,
he blurted out. Carolyn on the comms.
What?
She almost said his name, then stopped herself.
You need to hurry up.
5941,
Walter said to Getty, who was already accessing the control module. Then Walter keyed his comms.
I said stand by. We are working as quickly as possible. Let us work.
This is the only way. It has to happen this way. Getty tapped the code out on the module. He pulled his head back, waiting. Then he looked venomously at the captain. The very fact that he was showing anger was proof enough to Walter that things were spiraling out of control.
All right, now what? It's giving me all these fucking options.
The captain seemed vapor-locked for a moment.
What are the options? Motherfucker, I want the money out of the box.
It works like an ATM, the captain said.
Just enter the amount.
I don't want to enter a fucking amount, Getty said. I want to open the fucking box and take the money out.
How do I open the box?
I'm about to kill you, do you know that?
The captain swallowed hard. You can't open the box.
I can't open the box?
Getty's eyes flashed rare fire.
Fuck it, Kaz, ice this prick.
Wait, wait! The captain writhed in Kaz's grip and got shaken like a rag doll for his efforts.
Hold still, Kaz growled. Then to Walter, we need to fucking go.
Walter pumped his hand in the air, spitting mad.
Not yet.
He pointed to the captain.
You, are you refusing to open the box? I can't,
the captain nearly shrieked.
I would if I could, I just can't. I don't have the fucking key, I swear to God. Why would I lie? I've given you all the other codes.
All right.
Walter waved him off.
Shut up. How do we get the money out?
You're gonna have to...
He glanced at Getty again, who still looked murderous. The captain looked back at Walter, apparently preferring that.
You're gonna have to withdraw the money.
You gotta be fucking kidding me,
Getty groaned.
It's the only way to get the money out,
the captain insisted.
Unless you have the key. And I don't have the key. No one in this building has the key.
How much is in there? Walter demanded.
55,
the captain said.
Million,
he clarified.
Getty, Walter said. Can you type in that amount?
Getty was already busy at the monitor.
It's not letting me go that high.
You can only take out 5 at a time,
the captain said almost sheepishly.
You gotta be fucking kidding me,
Getty repeated.
No, it's a security...
The captain started.
Just shut up.
Walter cut him off. He pointed to Getty.
Do it. Take out 5 at a time until we empty that shit.
All right, okay.
Getty muttered, fingers already flying across the monitor. Kaz was not happy. He glared at Walter. At the black box, the machine's insides whirred, and from a bill-shaped port on the side, $5 million began riffling out.
That's the first 5, Getty said. And I'm on a fucking status bar. Won't let me type in the next amount until that shit gets done coming out.
Walter heard him, but held Kaz's gaze.
We gonna keep fighting about this?
Kaz shook his head one time.
No, not now. Later, maybe.
Well, if I live that long, I'm sure I'll regret it.
Carolyn on the comms again, speaking with barely controlled rage.
Briar patch to Rabbit. Give me a sit rep.
We're having to pull out 5 at a time,
Walter said, hoping that his intentionally ambiguous language was still understood. A pause. Then,
how long is that going to take?
Walter watched the last of the first 5 million flutter into the tray, one giant stack of bills nearly 4 feet high, and Walter understood why the machine only spat out 5 million at a time, because that 5 million completely filled the tray. Getty was already grabbing the money and stuffing it into his pack. Walter did a quick mental calculation.
Less than 5 minutes, he said over the comms.
Jesus Christ,
was the response.
Why are you doing this?
Walter winced at the tone.
Just trust me and don't be mad.
I'm fucking furious.
I know. Don't be.
The voice on the comms changed to Hughes, but he wasn't speaking to Walter. Javon and Bobby, heads up. There's been emergency calls about an explosion. You have 3 police units heading to your position right now, about 30 seconds out from you. Javon touched off his comms.
Roger that.
He looked at Bobby.
You ready?
Bobby hoisted her rifle. A regular battle rifle today, not her usual sniper rifle. They were more likely to need a whole lot of rounds downrange than a few selectively placed ones. Still, to be on the safe side, she'd stowed her big rifle under one of the back bench seats.
If we hit them hard enough,
Bobby said, pushing her door open,
they'll back up and wait for more units before engaging again. That might give us the window we need.
Javon nodded, pulling his own rifle out from between the 2 front seats.
Yeah, maybe. If Walter doesn't waste all our fucking time...
Bobby slipped out of the van and looked back at Javon.
Trust Walt. He's got a feel for these things.
Javon wagged the stump of his arm.
Yeah, I lost a fucking arm on his last op.
Bobby didn't really have much to say to that, but it seemed that Javon wasn't really holding it against Walter, simply pointing out that things could go sideways, and they often did. The 2 of them slammed their doors. Outside of the van, they heard the wailing of sirens bouncing off the tall downtown buildings, but then abruptly it silenced.
They're close,
Bobby noted.
Yup.
Javon posted on the corner of the OLC's portico. It was a nice hard cover made of concrete blocks. Bobby chose the engine block to sit behind. Javon noted her position.
You sure you want to use the engine block?
It's solid, isn't it?
I ain't worried about you, Javon replied. I'm worried about our getaway vehicle.
Bobby considered this for a few beats, then settled down behind her rifle sights over the top of the engine block.
We just gotta hit them hard when they come around the corner,
she reiterated.
Buy ourselves some time.
Sure.
Javon said, like nothing really mattered, and got himself situated. He could shoulder the rifle, but had no support hand, so he simply leaned the stump of his arm against the corner of the wall and then rested the front handguard of the battle rifle on that. If it pained him at all, he didn't show it. In the darkness, the streets of the city were very still. The entrance to the OLC was sandwiched between the actual OLC and a 5-story parking deck. The parking deck blocked their view of the road on one side, and the OLC itself blocked the view on the other side. They heard the shifting of an engine flying fast. A police vehicle. The chirp of tires a block or two away. Blue lights flickered on the side of a building and then disappeared.
"When they come around that corner,"
Bobby said in a low, intense voice,
"we're gonna give them everything we got."
Javon didn't even respond. He stayed glued to his rifle sights. Headlights in the pre-dawn darkness just past the parking deck. Bobby felt her cheek nestled against the buttstock of the battle rifle. She felt how it was in the right spot. Felt how naturally the rifle formed itself to her face. How easily her eye found the holographic reticle. And it hovered, dim and red, just in front of the parking deck at about what she figured was stomach height to a man, and a good place to aim on a vehicle. The glow of the headlights intensified, and at the last second became two shining pinpoints. Bobby whispered,
"Now,"
even though no one could hear her, and she pulled the trigger with a steady hand, and the rifle spat flame and lead and brass, and the compensator kept her reticle on target for a surprisingly long time. She watched the police vehicle come around the corner of the parking deck straight into her line of fire. She watched the holes appear in the sides of the vehicle, saw the front left tire suddenly burst in a shroud of pressurized dust, watched the windshield and the windows shatter into diamonds. The screech of brakes. The front end of the police vehicle dipped as it braked hard, shifted, squealing tires, burning rubber spewing up in clouds. Bobby kept firing, aiming for the engine block and the front axle. Javon fired too. The front sheet metal of the vehicle was pocked and ripped and torn apart, and chunks of it started to fly off, just as the tires got purchase on that asphalt and the vehicle reversed quickly out of sight. There was the sound of the vehicle braking again, a crunch as it hit something, distant yelling. Bobby pulled her smoking battle rifle close into her body and swapped the near-empty magazine out. On the comms, Javon's voice.
"Contact! We have contact with the police! Y'all better hurry the fuck up!"
Chapter 27.
"That's it," Walter said, slapping Getty on the shoulder. "We need to roll."
No more money. They'd done what they could do. Getty ripped the zippers up on the pack he was filling and slung it onto his back. Two bills fluttered in the air like feathers in a fox-raided henhouse. Walter's pack was already back on his shoulders. He emerged from the safe room. The captain and the lieutenant were face down on the floor, their hands bound behind their backs and hoods over their heads. Kaz and Gibbs stood in the center of the room, and their helmeted heads swiveled to look at Walter as he and Getty emerged from the room. Walter tossed his head towards the exit.
"Let's go."
Clay, Harris, and Monty were already stacked at the door.
"Move out," Kaz called.
Clay filed through the breech door back into the atrium, and Harris and Monty swooped in behind him. Walter slowed his movement as Kaz and Gibbs stepped up to the door. He heard a metallic banging sound, heavy. He dipped his head to see into the atrium, to see the two doors on the other side of the atrium, the doors that Clay and Monty had welded shut. One of them rattled on its hinges, bulging a bit in the center.
"They're trying to ram through," Clay called out.
"I see it," Kaz replied.
"Clay and Monty, hold on those doors while we exfil."
Then he turned and waved Getty and Walt through. In the atrium, Clay and Monty posted up on that battered door, Clay using the blasted remains of the rotunda as cover and Monty using the corner of the entryway. Walter and Getty jogged through the atrium. Their boots squeaked on the tile floors. The bloody body of that guard still slumped on the ground. The repeated thunderous banging of the soldiers on the other side of that door trying to get through. Walter cleared the corner of the entryway and saw through the breach, Javon looking back at them and yelling,
"Put some pepper on it! We need to..."
Whatever else he had to say was drowned out. With one resounding slam, the atrium door flew open. Clay and Monty immediately opened fire in a deafening fusillade. Walter dove for the entryway. Getty sprinted and raised his battle rifle with one arm. He let off a string of rounds that shattered out and hammered around the door. Walter heard the bullets coming back at them. They buzzed like angry hornets, and they toasted the air around his skin. As he scrambled across the tile, he managed to look back and see Getty toppling, his face a grimace, and Walter saw a streamer of blood, still hanging in the air from where a bullet had hit him. Getty hit the ground about 2 yards behind Walter. Kaz added his battle rifle to the chattering course directed at the door and yelled at Walter,
"Get him!"
Walter reached out with both hands and he seized a hold of Getty's arm and he hauled backwards with everything he had, yanking the man into cover. He heard a hard thwack and a grunt. Kaz teetered sideways as he stumbled back into cover beside Monty. Kaz righted himself, put his back against the walls, and smacked the right side of his armor.
Fuck!
He bellowed, stamped his foot.
I'm good, I'm good.
Walter turned his attention to Getty. Where are you hit? He demanded. Getty rose to his feet.
Top of my back,
Getty groaned, but didn't seem like he intended to lay around because of it. He was already on his feet.
I think I'm okay. Let's go.
Kaz pointed to the van.
Get in the fucking van,
he shouted at them.
We'll hold them off.
Then Kaz grabbed a little sphere from his vest and held it in the air so that Clay and Gibbs on the other side could see it. Then he deactivated the safety and engaged the timer, and he waited a painfully long time.
Frag out!
Kaz hurled the object around the corner, and barely had time to suck his hand back around before the atrium turned into a white haze of dust. Clay, Gibbs, and Harris sprinted across the atrium, leaving only Kaz and Monty to hold down their attackers. Walter reached the back of the van and shoved Getty headfirst into the open doors. Clay and Gibbs made it across, and they didn't break stride. Midway across the atrium, something took Harris by his left leg as he was in mid-step and sent that leg whipping out from under him. The new breed went sprawling, but his forward momentum carried him into the cover of the entryway. Kaz had already palmed another grenade, and he tossed it around the corner at the same instant that Harris slid into safety. Then he slapped Monty on the shoulder and shouted,
Roll, roll, roll!
Monty rolled. He pivoted on his feet and came up running. He reached down in one smooth movement and grabbed a hold of Harris by the arm as the wounded new breed struggled to his one good foot, and he half-carried the man for the entrance. Walter pinned the van doors open as Clay and Gibbs tumbled in. The explosion of the second grenade ripped through the atrium. Kaz rolled and ran for the van. Walter shouted over his shoulder,
Javon! Bobby! Get in the fucking van!
Walter held the door and Kaz dove in, landing between the two bench seats with a grunt and a clatter of gear. His comrades grabbed him up and dragged him fully into the van. Walter heard Javon and Bobby slam their doors one after the other. He slung himself up into the van and hauled the doors shut, and the second that they latched, he pounded the side of the van and yelled,
Go, Javon, go!
The engine roared and the tires screamed and the vehicle lurched, but didn't go anywhere.
Fuck!
Javon screamed.
The blast doors got us pinned to the fucking ground!
We talked about this, Kaz grated. Feather the gas and work your way out.
Walter turned his attention back to the rear doors of the van, the windows looking out. He saw the atrium, the entryway, a soldier leaning out, rifle up. Walter fired from the hip, sending a slurry of rounds careening through the door. The soldier jumped back behind cover, and Walter brought his rifle to his shoulder so he could actually aim.
We got company, Javon! Get us out!
I know,
Javon shouted.
I fucking know!
The vehicle lurched in the clutches of the blast doors, the sheet metal over Walter's head screeching and setting his teeth on edge, but he stayed focused. Another rifle coming around the corner. Walter fired. The windows shattered. This time the rifle in the atrium fired back. The rounds hitting the van sounded like pink, pink, pink.
Ah!
Walter recoiled as something nipped his neck.
God damn it! Fucking go!
The engine gave one last giant roar, and Javon yelled at everyone along with it.
Everyone shut the fuck up!
Then the van managed to get out of the teeth of the blast doors and rocketed forward with an explosive rending noise. Walter felt the acceleration pick him up and slam him face first into the door. A little metal flower sprouted right next to his face. His eyes widened and he pulled himself away from the bullet hole. His hand went to his neck and touched it. He took a few breaths, but it didn't seem like his breathing was encumbered. It didn't feel like blood was bubbling in his throat, but when he pulled his hands away from his throat, it was red. Not just a little red. It was covered. For a moment, Walter just turned and looked at the new breeds in the back of the van. Kaz and Gibbs tried to right themselves as Javon violently piloted the van into a turn and accelerated towards the exit. Clay grabbed Harris's leg, asking him if it was okay. Monty rolled Getty onto his stomach to take a look at the wound on his back. And Walter just sat there for a moment, thinking, Well, everyone seems pretty goddamn busy, and you're not the only one that's shot up right now. He took another look at the blood on his hand. It was bad. But how bad? Walter had no clue. He was a terrible judge of these types of things. He didn't know what to do, and he didn't really have any medical supplies to start working on himself, and everyone seemed busy helping someone else, so Walter just clamped his fingers over the little divot in his skin where he felt the blood coming out of, and the salt of his sweaty fingers seared the skin of his neck, but the hole was plugged closed for now, and he was breathing perfectly fine, right? So he'd be fine. He'd be fine. The old man named Pete was bound and sitting on his knees in the middle of the living room floor. Agent Goring looked about distastefully, as though the stain of the recently departed rebels was a lingering stench. He was at the front door. the door they had breached. They'd done it mechanically, and the door was barely there anymore. It had taken only one hit. Goring pointed to it and looked across the living room at the man named Pete. Not a very stout door for a safe house. He took a step inside and closed the door behind him, even though it couldn't latch. He held it in place so that it wouldn't fall open again, then removed his hands gingerly, as though he'd made a house of cards that would barely withstand a stiff breeze. That's just shoddy, Pete. Should've reinforced the door. Metal frame, metal door, fucking something. He turned around and looked at the man. Shit, he sighed. You must have really thought you were safe. Pete knelt there the whole time, and his chin stuck out like a bulldog, and his bloodshot eyes drooped, and he seemed ready to start growling, ornery old cur that he was. On either side of the old man were two new breeds, and they stood with their rifles angled at his chest. Goring took another look around, noted the brass latch of the door sitting in the corner of the living room amongst a scattering of wooden debris from the door, noted the crescent-shaped scorch marks from the diversionary grenades, one in the entry right under Goring's feet, and another in the corner of the living room not too far from where Pete knelt. Goring took a deep breath and crossed the distance between him and Pete. He looked down at the man. The man looked up at him. Goring's lips twitched. You're not going to talk, are you? Goring asked him. You have that look about you. Old hand at the grindstone, huh? Done it all before. Pete didn't respond. Goring nodded once. Well, here's how this is going to go. You're either going to tell me where Walter Balcom is, or I'm going to kill you. After I kill you, I'm going to have my team hack your PD and any other electronics that are in this house, and we will eventually find out where they are. Obviously, that takes slightly more time, which is why I'm giving you the option to save your life right now and tell me where... Goring's own PD interrupted him with a terse little tone. He glanced skyward with annoyance and sighed. He swiped the monitor up and sent it to his earbud. It was the director. Goring felt his stomach tighten. Goring here? The director had no greeting for him. He just launched into it. You have any idea what the fuck is going on in Durham right now? Goring felt heat rising up his neck. It was never a good idea to not know what the director wanted you to know. He scrambled about for some easy answer, but knew it would only make him look like more of an idiot if he guessed wrong. No, sir, I'm not aware. Of course you're not aware, the director yelled in his ear. Goring bit his tongue. Because you're out wasting government resources chasing one backwoods farm boy that you and only you thinks is some sort of fucking redneck mastermind. Christ. Well, sir, Goring said, straining to control himself, I'm actually with a suspect right now. We'll know where Walter Balcom is within an hour at most. And I promise that- Oh, you don't need to wait for an hour, the director interrupted. I can tell you where he is right now. Would you like to see? The heat on Goring's neck had turned cold. He didn't dare answer that question. I'm sending you a video, Agent Goring, the director said. Goring looked at his monitor and saw the status bar shoot full and the video appear. Yes, sir, I have it. Watch it. Don't you dare say another fucking word until you've watched it. Yes, sir. So Goring watched it. Hot cold, his skin went. Heart beating hard. Then anger. Rage. It was security footage. It only took Goring a moment, but he recognized the building. The atrium, the rotunda. It was the OLC. He also recognized Walter Lawrence Balcom III. But more important than the face that he recognized were the faces that he couldn't see. Faces on top of massive bodies, covered by battle shrouds. Shit. I see that Walter Balcom is at the OLC, Goring said. Not anymore, the director belted out. Fuck Walter Balcom! Did you see the fucking new breeds? Do you know what this means? Again, Goring decided that the best option was to remain silent. He himself was the replacement for the previous agent in command of the region, an agent who'd been sacked by this very director for being ineffective. And now Goring felt himself being inexorably pushed towards this cliff himself. He stood on the brink now, and afraid that one wrong move would send him over. It means, the director hissed, that the renegades are making their move. And they're making their move on Durham. Durham, the place you should be focusing on.
Sir, with all due respect, I am focusing on Durham. You have to take the major players out of the game. That was the reason you brought me on board in the first place, wasn't it? Because you knew I could identify the targets and exploit their contacts. You knew I could do this, and I am doing it right now.
Well, there's not much point now, is there? The director said. We don't particularly need your skill set for Durham. Durham is a war zone, and it's going to get worse. It's obvious to me that the Renegades are making a move there, and I fully intend to stamp that out.
Goring frowned.
Sir, I would advise against any knee-jerk reactions.
Don't you dare try to advise me.
Goring turned away from Pete and took two steps back towards the door to gain himself a little privacy. He spoke lower now, facing the shattered remains of the front door.
It seems to me that you intend to remove me from my position, Director. In the waning hours of my tenure, allow me to be frank.
Goring's pulse hit his head so hard that his vision jumped. He was taking a massive risk talking to the director like this, but he felt that needling instinct in his gut that told him to speak now or regret it later. If he didn't speak, all he could do was watch the government fumble its way to a Renegade victory, and while that would ultimately vindicate him, it would be too bitter of a victory to truly enjoy. The director's response was flat.
Speak.
This stinks of a trick.
Oh, Goring, the director said, exasperated.
Director, I know these people better than you do. I know them very well, and I understand you view that as a liability right now, but answer me this one question. Why the hell would the Renegades come out of hiding to hit the OLC?
To make millions of dollars.
Sir, that's chump change in the grand scheme of things. It simply doesn't make sense. I think that you know that it doesn't make sense, but I think you, just like everyone else, has a superior that is breathing down your neck and you're about to make a very poor decision because of it.
Goring closed his eyes and pressed on.
There's a wealth of military targets that the Renegades could hit when they come out of hiding. There is nothing valuable to Durham. It's just symbolic. If you knew Colonel Wainwright like I do, you'd know he's not one for symbolic victories. He's utterly practical. He's not sending a team of new breeds to knock over a few million dollars.
Goring opened his eyes and looked at his PD monitor again, the video frozen at the last frame.
It makes no sense, he repeated,
almost as though thinking to himself, and perhaps that's what he was doing, brainstorming out loud.
The target makes no sense. But further than that, why the hell would they let themselves get caught on video? It would be in Wainwright's interest to keep his movements in Durham a secret for as long as possible. He just wouldn't do this. He wouldn't do it this way. None of this makes sense.
The director finally broke in.
None of it makes sense. It just fucking happened. It doesn't need to make sense. It needs to be reacted to.
That is a massive mistake. There's a reason this is happening. I know it. I know how they think. They don't have the numbers and they don't have the resources to make a direct attack like invading Durham. It'd be a mire for them with no strategic value. These Baucom boys, they know how to use tricks. They know how to goad the coax, and they've been doing it for generations.
Oh, the Baucoms, the Baucoms. You never shut the fuck up about the Baucoms. It was one fucking video, Goring.
With all due respect, I think it's more than that.
Goring turned again and looked at Pete.
They have something. They have a weapon. That's the only explanation for how they knocked over that convoy a few weeks ago. They have a weapon, and they're trying to draw us into a fight they can control so they can use it. They have to do it like that. They don't have the resources for a straight fight, so they always have to use deception.
Goring,
give me 24 hours, Goring snapped suddenly. I've got these fuckers on the ropes. I've got them. Don't take me off it now. 24 hours won't cripple your response in Durham, and I can prove to you that they have a weapon, and I can uncover their plans to use it. You just have to give me one day. Just one day.
The director made a huffing noise. He wasn't one to bandy about a decision, and Goring could hear that the decision had already been made. It had probably been made halfway through what Goring was trying to say. What it came down to was politics. If Goring turned out to be right in his warning, and the director didn't take his warning, then it would reflect poorly on him. In truth, Goring's self-imposed timeline was giving the director an out, a way to say that he gave Goring a chance, but also a way to be rid of Goring in short order.
We can't mobilize for another 16 hours anyways, the director said. Another 8 won't break us. But let me explain something to you, Goring. I don't like you. I never did like you. You were a matter of convenience, and you've become decidedly inconvenient. So you either start making yourself extremely useful, or things are going to go much worse for you than your predecessor. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
Make yourself useful.
Goring nodded, still staring at Pete.
I will.
The director had already disconnected. Goring snapped his PD shut. He took one deep breath through his nose, nodded at Pete.
Kill him, he commanded.
Pete's face twisted in pure hatred.
You fucking...
Both new breeds fired at the same time.
Both rounds entered the top of Pete's back and blew out the bottom of his stomach and obliterated everything in between, including the man's heart, and he died instantly, flopping forward onto the floor, his hound dog face gone slack.
"We don't need him anymore," Goring said. "Get his PD and any other personal electronics in the house. Gather them up and put them on the counter. I also want a perimeter set up. Just in case our friends decide to return in the near future, I want to be ready to snatch them up."
Goring activated his comms and spoke to Agent Barnes.
"Send a tech team in. And bring me Macy Stockwell."
Chapter 28. A heavily modified van plunged onto the interstate loop, and once in among the light traffic, it slowed to a normal pace and blended in with the rest of the people living out their lives. In among them, any driver would think that the van was just in a hurry to merge and was now driving normally. If anyone was watching the traffic pass by, the van looked like any other number of vans, albeit with some body damage to the back of the roof. The interior was a different matter. It had turned into a madhouse.
"I think we're clear," Javon reported, and then sent the question over the comms, which buzzed in everyone's ear.
In the back of the van, Walter was still sweating and worrying about the hole in his neck, but he wasn't positive whether it was a hole or just a nick. Harris had taken a bullet to the calf. They had him up on the bench seat now, his legs splayed out across the center and propped up on Clay's lap while Clay stuffed the wound with HSA and kept telling Harris,
"Be cool, be cool. It'll be over in a second."
And Harris yelled back through gritted teeth,
"I'm fucking cool. Stop telling me to be cool. Just plug the fucking hole."
"Trying to help you, bro. Don't get testy."
Harris squeezed a hand over his face.
"Oh my fuck,"
Kaz chimed in.
"Jesus, Harris. Javon didn't even fuss that much when he lost his arm."
"Fuck you,"
Harris growled back.
"It stings."
On the floor, Kaz and Gibbs worked on Getty, who was stomach down on the floor but trying to crane his neck in an anatomically impossible way in order to get a look at his wound. It was a deep groove that started in one shoulder blade, tore a furrow in his skin about to the point where it met his spine, then went under the skin, a purplish subcutaneous trail, and popped back out on the other shoulder blade in an even wider and more ragged-looking exit. They were worried about him being paralyzed, but Getty had already established that he hadn't lost control of his limbs. His right leg kept hitting the ground, pounding it when the pain got to him.
"You're so fucking lucky," Gibbs noted while he worked to plug the entry wound. "If that shooter had been an inch more on target, you'd be dead or paralyzed."
"If I'd moved an inch faster, I wouldn't have gotten hit at all," Getty mumbled. "Where's my fucking cigarettes?"
"I'll get you one,"
Kaz said, but didn't seem to be telling the truth. He was busy holding gauze down on the exit wound.
"In a minute," he clarified.
On the comms, Hughes's voice came over. "They do have a description of the van, but you lost them 3 intersections before you hit the interstate. They do appear to be sending units to the interstate. I think they also have a pretty good idea that you're probably heading back to the red zone." Kaz swore. Without a free hand, he couldn't key his comms.
"Javon, you focus on driving. Bobby, ask him for a recommendation."
Bobby's voice on the comms.
"Kaz wants a recommendation."
Pause.
"What do you mean, recommendation?" "Fuck."
Kaz shook his head.
"I mean a goddamn recommendation. What does he recommend? Should we gun it? Should we take a special route? Can he give us a little help knowing what he knows? Tell him to get his head out of his ass and get with the fucking program."
Bobby was twisted in her seat looking at Kaz, and she quirked an eyebrow at him. Walter knew damn well that she wasn't going to repeat that over the comms. That simply wasn't her style. Instead, she went with,
"Based on what you can see, is there a better path home? Should we drive fast and take chances? Or should we split off from the planned route to avoid them catching us between here and the red zone?"
"Stick to the route," Hughes replied. "I think you got the jump on them. If you can hit the red zone ahead of them, they won't follow. We'll move units to that area to stop them if they try."
"Sounds great," Kaz barked.
"We copy,"
was what Bobby transmitted.
"Walter."
Walter jerked and tore his eyes away from all the decisions being made in the front of the van and looked at Monty, who was across from him.
"Yeah?
You all right?"
Monty asked, pointing to his neck.
"What you got there?"
Walter kept his hand on the hole.
"I'm not really sure."
"Shit," Monty mumbled and propelled himself out of the seat, clambering over Harris's wounded leg while Clay yelled at him to be careful and Harris just growled at him through clenched teeth.
"When the fuck did that happen? Why didn't you say something?"
"Y'all were busy,"
Walter stated. Clay glanced in his direction as he finished up with Harris.
"Hey, Walt's hit,"
Clay announced to the rest of the van. Getty moved, tried to twist, but Kaz and Gibbs both shoved him back down.
"Hold still," Gibbs ordered.
Bobby craned into the back, genuine concern on her face.
"Walt, You okay?
Walter felt hot, cold faintness wash over him. The concern on their faces was not helping him. He'd half convinced himself that it was nothing more than a shaving cut, but the way they looked at him said it was something more. There was a slight tremor in his voice, but he held up a thumb.
I'm good. I think I'm good.
Monty managed to get his bulky body over Clay and Harris's operation, and he sat directly across from Walter, filling the space in between with his mass. He reached forward and gently took the hand that Walter was holding on the wound. Here, Monty said, with concentration in his voice and a frown on his face. Turn your head a bit and let me look at it. He peeled Walter's fingers away like a bandage. Let's take a look. Oop. Monty shoved Walter's fingers back in place. Walter glanced at him, gut clenching hard enough to feel like a cramp.
What? Is it bad?
As he looked at Monty out of the corner of his eye, Monty looked at him back.
Well, Monty appeared to be choosing his words. It didn't squirt, so that's good.
Walter blinked a few times.
What the fuck does that mean?
It means it didn't hit you carotid, Monty said, and held a hand out towards Clay.
Give me some HSA. Bandage. Someone got a bandage?
I got a plug, Clay said, holding it up with bloody fingers.
No, I need a bandage.
I got a bandage, Gibbs called out.
Hold on.
Walter realized his heart hurt, and he had the fleeting thought that it was because he was running out of blood. But that couldn't possibly be the case, could it? Shit. He wished he wasn't feeling this so much. He could remember how detached he'd felt during other operations. He'd been so calloused over the course of the last 2 weeks. For some reason, right now, the possibility of dying was bothering him more so than it had before. And he thought he knew why. Because he had Carolyn again. Because they had a possible way out. Because now there was a light at the end of the tunnel.
Fuck, Walter said under his breath. How bad is it? I was hoping it wasn't that bad.
Monty glanced at him. It's bleeding.
I know it's fucking bleeding.
But it's not squirting, so that's good. Clay held pressure on Harris's wounds. He craned his neck to look at Walter.
Pulsing?
He asked, and Walter wasn't sure whether he was asking him or Monty or even what exactly he was asking.
Yeah, it's pulsing a bit, Monty replied.
Then he snapped his finger.
Any time now with that bandage.
Hold on, I said, Gibbs hollered back. Clay made a disconsolate noise and met Walter's gaze.
Just keep holding pressure on it, okay?
Walter nodded.
Okay.
His mouth felt very dry, very gummy, like he'd eaten paste. He blew out a breath through pursed lips and felt them tremble. His whole body started to shake.
Get the fuck a hold of yourself, he ordered himself.
Bandage, Gibbs announced, tossing a green packet over Harris's leg. Monty caught it in the air and ripped it open. Walter closed his eyes. In the darkness behind his eyelids, he saw splashes of white light and deep red. His head swirled without a visual waypoint to steady it. He felt his eyes lurching around like a man groping in the dark. He felt a hard tap on his forehead. He opened his eyes. One space down from him on the bench seat, Harris looked at him, tapping his forehead with a stern fingertip. When he saw Walter's eyes open, he dropped his hand.
Hey, he said. You fucking stay awake.
Walter nodded once.
We need you, Harris said. This all falls apart without you, you understand?
Walter nodded again.
There's still shit you gotta do.
Right.
The work's not done.
The work's not done. Monty spoke. Take your hand away. Walter pulled his hand away from the hole, still holding eye contact with Harris and thinking, the work's not done, Walter. The work's not fucking done. He felt warmth flow down his neck, wetness on his collar. Monty pressed the HSA to the wound.
This might burn.
I know.
Walter bared his teeth and didn't move his head away like he wanted to. Monty took Walter's hand and put it on top of the bandage.
Hold that there.
Then he snapped his fingers again at Clay.
Give me that tape.
Tape. It was handed over. Monty ripped a piece and stuck it across the bandage to hold it. He leaned back to inspect his work, then met Walt's eyes.
I think you'll be okay. The HSA will stop the bleeding. For now.
Walter blinked.
I can still work, right?
Monty nodded.
Until you die.
Walter frowned, not sure what he'd meant by that, but he never got a chance to ask.
Good news and bad news, Hughes' voice said over the comms, his pace clipped. Cops are pulling back. I think they were told to back off. The bad news is that there's a flight of gunships in the air right now, and I'm pretty sure they're looking for you guys.
Carolyn stood grasping the edge of the command table and staring at the projection. Her face was as still as a granite statue. Inside, she was molten lava bubbling over. She didn't trust herself to talk. To her left, she heard Hughes talking in real time, and in her ear, she heard both sides of the conversation over the comms, slightly delayed.
"Where are they right now?"
Walter asked. His voice sounded off. "Something's wrong."
"We don't have a good position," Hughes said. "It's just from a spotter report."
"Hughes, we need to know where not to be."
"I know, brother."
Hughes rubbed his face.
"I'm working on it."
Off the air now, he extended his neck and looked at Carolyn, panic gleaming in his eyes like a fever.
"What do you want to do?"
"I have no idea where those gunships are." Carolyn started knocking her knuckles on the table as she stared that stone-still stare back at him. Her stillness didn't show the tumult of thoughts rushing through her mind like rain-swollen swift water. She couldn't let go of the tone of Walter's voice. "Something's wrong," she kept thinking, despite the fact that she wanted herself to focus on the question at hand, which was how in the hell do we figure out how to keep Walter from getting blown up by a missile from a gunship? But "something's wrong" kept buzzing around her like a fly that just won't leave you the fuck alone. She wanted to ask him what was wrong.
"Now's not the time."
"What's wrong?"
"Not the fucking time."
She stood up straight and closed her eyes. Fuck trying to look solid. She needed to concentrate. If she looked weak while she concentrated and figured things out, then so be it. She'd rather do her best and look scared than look confident and lose her husband.
"We need..."
She was thinking out loud.
"We need to know where the gunships are."
"That's what I'm..."
"Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!"
"Okay."
She grabbed her face. Spotters could see the gunships in flight. Without being directly under them or above them, there was no real way to pinpoint where they were flying. "We don't need pinpoint accuracy." No, they needed approximate accuracy. But none of them could do that for Walter, because none of them could look at a flight of gunships hovering over a cityscape and know what streets they passed over, not with any degree of accuracy, because they didn't know the city.
Well, who knows the city?
Carolyn opened her eyes and started snapping her fingers in the air. She turned to Carmichael.
"Who knows the city?"
Carmichael frowned.
"What?"
Carolyn turned to the other people in the command group. People that were the quiet, behind-the-scenes people that had been working this little hideaway since Carolyn had arrived 2 weeks ago. She knew some of them by name, but mostly just by face. She raised her voice to be heard by everyone present.
"Who knows the city? I need someone who knows the city like the back of their fucking hand."
Everyone stared blankly.
"Don't be fucking modest."
She clapped her hands together rapidly.
"Someone, anyone, who knows the fucking city?"
A hand shot up.
"You."
Carolyn craned to see who the hell it was. It was Jin. The young woman with the piercings and the eye makeup. She looked terrified.
"You know the city?"
Carolyn asked.
"Yes,"
the young woman squeaked.
"That works for me,"
Carolyn said. She motioned rapidly with her hands.
"Come with me."
They hauled ass to the top of the parking garage. It was the best overlook they had of the city. Carolyn carried her comms with her as they went. Reaching the top of the parking garage, into the open air where the dawn was just beginning to light the sky, they were lucky to be looking into the east, which meant that they had the brightest backdrop on which to spot the gunships.
"There!"
Carolyn thrust a finger out.
"You see them?"
Jin squinted.
"Yeah, I see them. Can you figure out where they are?"
Jin's eyes went up and down, from the visible rooftops of the city's skyline to the flight of three gunships out in the distance. After a painful second of thought, she said,
"Yeah, I think they're right over the 540 loop. That would be my guess." "Perfect,"
Carolyn said, even though it wasn't. What it was good enough. She keyed her comms.
"If you're on the loop, you should get off of it right now. Do you copy?"
Chapter 29.
"We copy," Javon said back and immediately cut the van across four lanes of interstate traffic. Horns blared and tires squealed, and Javon apparently did not give a damn. He angled sharply for an exit and just barely made it without striking the guardrail.
"Talk to her," Javon said to Bobby.
"Got it,"
Bobby said, then keyed up.
"We just got off on Old Apex. We're on Old Apex Highway heading north."
There was momentary silence on the line. Walter climbed forward in the van, stabilizing himself by grabbing a hold of the new breeds as Javon jostled the van in and out of traffic. Walter could see out the windshield, and he could tell the traffic was clearing out, and the landscape beyond the road was looking less like a city and more like a war zone. They were entering the yellow zone. Carolyn's voice.
"I'm handing you over to someone. She's going to keep you out of the sights of those gunships. Stand by."
Walter reached the front of the van, his hands grasping the two front seats as he knelt between them and stared out at the road in front of them.
"Bobby, you need to get those maps back up. I don't want them guiding us into a roadblock. We're going to need to improvise some of this."
Bobby nodded and flipped her PD monitor back to life. The map projection came up and Bobby started scrolling, finding Old Apex Highway and then tracing along it.
Looks clear for the next mile or so. Hello?
A new voice said on the comms. Female. Timid.
You navigate, Walter said to Bobby. I'll talk.
Then over the comms, he said,
Yeah? You got a fix on where we are right now?
Yes. So I'm supposed to tell you that I know the city very well.
Do you?
Yes.
Then tell me where the fuck to go.
Okay. Well...
Walter ground his teeth painfully together and gripped the back of Bobby's chair until it hurt his fingertips.
The gunships are veering north,
the city girl said. Kaz piped up from the back.
Someone is telling them where we are. Javon, are we being followed?
Javon checked the mirrors.
Nobody followed us off the interstate. Could be people calling about an erratic driver, Kaz pointed out. Slow your roll.
You really want me to slow my roll?
Walter shook his head vehemently.
We're less than 10 miles from the red zone. Don't you fucking slow down now.
Old Apex is gonna run into the green zone in a few miles,
city girl said.
You're gonna want to get off that ASAP.
Javon swerved around a silver car and stomped on the brake as they approached an intersection with cross traffic.
Highway 54?
He demanded.
Highway 54?
Walter demanded of city girl.
What?
Was her response.
Highway 54! He shouted. Should we fucking take it?
Yes,
she shouted back.
Make a left.
Javon launched them into the intersection with a terse,
Clench your buttholes.
Something hit the side of the van. Or rather, the van hit something. There was a collective grunt and gasp. Javon righted the van without losing control.
We're good.
He slammed on the accelerator again and swore at whoever or whatever it was that he collided with. Kaz swore loudly.
Fucking one-armed, non-driving fuck.
Walter gave Javon a slap on the shoulder.
You're aces. Keep fucking driving.
Then transmitting. We're on 54.
Good,
city girl said.
You should be coming west towards us, and it looks like the gunships are still going north. Roadblock.
Bobby shot out, intensely focused on her map.
In a mile.
Where do I turn?
Javon asked.
Don't matter, Walter answered. Turn somewhere.
I don't want to turn on a dead end or something.
Here,
Bobby said, smacking her window repeatedly.
Right here.
Javon slammed on the brakes. Walter went pitching forward, just barely keeping his face from slamming the dash. The van went into a hard right-hand turn. Walter wrestled himself upright again.
What are we on?
Fayetteville.
We're on Fayetteville,
Walter announced to city girl.
Heading north.
Oh, shit. Well?
What's another road that'll get us back to the red zone?
Jin had her eyes closed, holding the earpiece in her ear with one hand, the other hand clenched to her forehead.
Woodcroft.
Carolyn watched her, every muscle in her body rigid. She couldn't hear what Walter was saying back over the comms. She'd given her earpiece to Jin.
Woodcroft Parkway,
Jin repeated, opening wide, scared eyes.
Left. Make a left.
Carolyn looked out over the cityscape. With the sky getting brighter towards the east, it was harder to see the flight of gunships. After a few seconds of squinting, she picked them out. They looked closer than before.
They're getting closer,
she said. Then she pointed.
Look, they're banking. Coming west, towards us.
Carolyn swore, then looked to Jin.
Tell them they have someone with eyes on them. They're being followed by something. Someone is following you,
city girl said in a tone that suggested she was simply repeating something.
The gunships are coming after you now.
Walter clacked his teeth together.
Think. You sure we're not being followed?
He said to Javon.
Sweet fucking... Yes, I'm positive we're not being followed.
Walter twisted to look in the back.
Thermals.
Kaz's eyebrows went up.
What?
Who's got the fucking thermals?
Oh.
Kaz stretched his back to be able to easily access a pouch on his vest, and he pulled from it the thermal imaging scope they'd used in the past. Walter snatched it out of his hands.
Someone hold on to me so I don't fall out,
he said, and then without waiting for a response, he ripped open the side door of the van. Cool morning air and the roar of engines and tires on concrete flooded the interior of the van. Walter grabbed a hold of the van's roof with one hand and held to the thermal scope with the other. He heard someone swear and then grab a hold of his belt line and say,
I gotcha.
Walter leaned out, looking straight up at the sky. The wind buffeted his ears, pushed air into his throat. He put the scope to his eyes and looked skyward. It was still pre-dawn. The sky was still dark enough straight above them to hide it, but not with a thermal imager. To the naked eye, he only saw a dark expanse of deep blue turning gray. But when he brought the imager to his eye, he saw the little glowing pinpoints of heat far above them. Four of them in a perfect square.
Drone!
Walter said. Then he ducked back inside.
There's a fucking drone above us.
Well, fuck, Javon said.
What am I supposed to do about that?
You make a right turn. Right here. Go back towards the green zone.
To his credit, Javon didn't question it. The four little pinpoints of light Walter had seen would be the heat from the four electronic motors that kept the drones afloat. He had to assume that this one was not equipped with ordnance, otherwise it would have already blown them away. Javon heaved the van in a sharp right turn, and now they were heading north, and then northeast, back towards the green zone.
Bobby, Walter said.
Yeah?
She looked into the back and made eye contact with him.
Can you make that shot?
She passed her tongue over her lips.
Yes,
she said.
I can make that shot.
Walter flattened himself against the side of the van. Bobby scrambled into the back with an aside to Javon.
This road's clear of roadblocks for another 2 or 3 miles.
Okay, Javon said with an edge to his voice. Don't take too long.
Bobby bent down to her knees and reached under the bench seat where Gibbs was sitting. The wind from the open van door threw her hair around, but she remained heedless of it, supremely focused. From under the bench, she drew out a tan soft case, and she quickly unbuckled it and revealed her sniper rifle lying neatly inside. She plucked it from the straps that held it in place. The big 10-round magazine was already in the gun. She stood it up on its buttstock, flipped the lens cap from its scope, and then racked around into the chamber. She sat down on the floor and spread her legs out in front of her, with her back to the open door, and for a second it looked like she was about to fall backwards out of the van. She looked at Walter.
Hold my legs down. Hard.
Walter dropped to his knees and gripped her by the ankles.
Javon,
she said.
When I say so, pull to the side and stop the van.
You want me to stop?
Just do what she says,
Walter said. Bobby settled the big rifle to her shoulder, worked her support grip, shuffled her hips around, then took a big breath.
All right, Javon, stop the car.
The van skidded to a rough stop. Immediately, Bobby laid backwards, flat on her back, looking up at the sky, the rifle pointing straight upwards. The barrel just barely clearing the edge of the van. Bobby took another breath and then let it all out.
Boom!
The muzzle blast rocked the inside of the van. Walter's nose and sinuses tingled. Bobby rolled back into the van.
Got it! Go, go, go!
Javon punched it. Burned rubber.
Make a left!
Walter called, hanging onto the seats to keep himself from tumbling in the back.
Right here!
And Javon hung that left, and just as quickly, Walter recognized a series of burned-out apartments to the right. And when they whizzed by the open van door, Walter looked out and he saw a flash of graffiti written in red, and he knew what it was going to say before he even saw it. Fuck the coax. They were back in the red zone. The van was hot. The description was out, and the gunships were loitering just out of missile range. Walter had anticipated that, and they had a plan for it. It was no great feat of logic on his part. Everyone knew that you didn't want to drive a hot van straight back to the Fresh Market. If the coax was on their game, and they usually were, then the info would be getting dispersed to their informants, and Durham was crawling with informants. All it would take was for one of those lowlives to spot the van and call it in, and the location of their little headquarters would be under assault, or maybe just pounded into rubble from afar. Once they were back in the red zone, and with the drone off their back, Javon knew exactly where to go. They drove quickly out to a sub-level parking deck, and they went down to the very bottom of it. It was rows upon rows of cars. Everyone that still lived in the city had found a parking deck to stash their car in, and this parking deck was not an exception. People used to be able to leave their cars in lots or on curbs, but no one wanted to wake up in the morning to find their car riddled with bullet holes or buried under concrete rubble. At the bottom level, Javon pulled the van to a stop. He glanced around at his mirrors.
Looks clear, folks.
The doors opened and the people came out. Getty was slightly hunched. The bullet that had traced a groove across his back had done some damage to a back muscle, and he was having a hard time standing up straight. He tried to grab the backpack full of money that he'd ferried into the van, but Walter slapped his hand off of it.
I got you, Getty,
Walter said, sliding out with a backpack in both hands.
You focus on walking.
Getty shrugged and winced at the pain it caused. Free of the confines of the van, he lit up a cigarette and leaned his ass up against the side with a tired huff. Javon walked to a black sedan and pulled a key fob from his pocket. The lights on the sedan flashed and the doors unlocked. The trunk popped open. Next to the black sedan, Bobby approached a dark blue GUV and unlocked it and opened the back hatch. Walter tossed one backpack into the sedan and the other into the GUV. Kaz and Gibbs helped Harris limp his way into the GUV. Clay and Monty made for the sedan. Bobby stood by and looked at Walter, her eyes going to his neck.
You sure you're good?
Yeah,
Walter nodded. Careful of his range of motion as he did.
Let's just stick to the original plan.
Bobby gave him one curt nod, then looked over his shoulder.
Getty, you ready?
Getty grumbled something about his cigarette.
Just smoke out the window,
Bobby told him.
Come on, we need to get out of here.
Walter closed the back hatch of the GUV. Clay closed the trunk of the sedan before taking a seat inside. Getty put a hand on his shoulder on his way to the front seat of the GUV.
Brother?
Walter looked at him. Getty pointed the cigarette at him.